to Nobody Told Me. I'm Laura Owens.
And I'm Jan Black.
You may not realize it, but women are the fastest growing group of entrepreneurs in the United States today. Yet, according to a recent TechCrunch study, female-founded companies receive a mere fraction of venture capital investments compared to an all-male-founded company. Our guest on this episode, Catherine Finney, is working to change that.
Catherine is the managing general partner and founder of The Genius Guild, a $20 million venture fund. She's also the founder of Digital Undivided, a tech incubator for underrepresented women, and the founder of the Dooney Fund, a micro-investment fund for Black women-owned businesses. And if that's not enough, she's also the author of the new book, Build the Damn Thing, How to Start a Successful Business If You're Not a Rich White Guy. Catherine, we thank you so much for joining us.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to talk with you.
Why did you decide to write this book and who do you hope will read it?
Well, I hope everyone will read it.
Smart businesswoman, yeah.
Right? You know, I wrote this book because I would travel around to all different conferences and meetings and such, which is what you do when you are an entrepreneur yourself and then become a venture capitalist, which is what I currently do. And I would meet these amazing founders and amazing people who would tell me about their businesses. And they would go, you know, into these big productions and big talks about their businesses, but like hadn't actually built it. And they were doing everything but building it. And I would just say to them, like, why don't you just build the damn thing? Like, they would say, oh, I'm going to do this research. I'm going to write this business plan and all this stuff. And I was like, just build the damn thing. That's all you have. Who weren't born harder because of our identities, whether we are women, whether we're,
you know, I actually think, I think it cut out for quite a bit there.
Yeah,
I don't know why.
Hang
on, it's on our end too. I think, let me try. You see, can you hear us?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Okay. Okay. Perfect. Do you maybe want to start up again with that answer? Because your answer was so good of what we heard.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah. Yeah. If you could just maybe,
yeah, about why you wrote the book.
Yeah, pick it up. Why you wrote the book.
So I wrote the book for those of us who have to work extra hard to build companies, for those of us who weren't born with the cheat codes. And as an entrepreneur and an investor myself, I've read like every business book you can possibly think of. But all of it was written from this point of view of a white guy, right? Where you are, or a single white guy at that. And that you didn't have to think of things, right? I'm a mom. I can't just get on a plane tomorrow to go pitch or talk to an investor. I have to actually plan that out, right? I have to either find help or ask a family member or so forth. So it's a little bit more difficult for me than it is for other people. And I was wondering, where was the business book for people like myself who had to think of these sort of things and do a little bit more? And then also I was traveling and meeting with a lot of amazing entrepreneurs who are building companies or wanting to build companies. And they would tell me all about their great ideas and talk on and on about the research and the business plans they were writing. And I would just say to them, well, why don't you just build the damn thing? Like, you're telling me all this great stuff about the idea, but yet it's not built. So just build it. Go build the damn thing. And so when I was writing this book and thinking of the title, my assistant was like, you know, the title should just be Build a Damn Thing, because that's what you say all the time to everyone. And so that's where the book came from.
It seems like where a lot of women and really just entrepreneurs in general get stumped and don't even develop their ideas because they think, how do I get from just having this vision in my head to actually getting the funding? It's like that whole idea of being able to pitch, or let's say a lot of people are familiar with Shark Tank, just getting to that level, getting that funding. Like, how do you do that? How do you go from getting money from family and friends to being able to actually get money to do something with that idea?
Well, the key is to not center the money, center the idea. And I know that's easier said than done. But at the end of the day, as an investor, I want to invest in great people building great things that people want. That is what I care about. And that's what I invest in. You know, as an entrepreneur, I want to build things that people want to buy. And so really the key to raising money is building something that people want. And I know that sounds really basic, but you would be surprised how many entrepreneurs forget that. They build the things maybe they want or their close, you know, community wants, but not something that others want. And I think that's super, super important. And then two, really ask yourself, why are you building this? Like, I think many of us have great ideas, but we don't really understand the impact of the idea, the size of the idea, and whether or not that idea is actually something others want. And so really the key is to just get started. And I know that's counterintuitive, particularly if you're of a certain generation. I think those of us who are, you know, Gen Xers and later, we were told that you plan, and then you execute. But that's not the case anymore. You don't have to spend so much time planning and thinking about it, mostly because the barrier to entry is so low. So you can actually just get started with a very simple idea. And I talk about in the book about how to do what I call the ugly baby test, which is take an idea in its very basic form, get it onto what we call a minimal viable product, which is really the most simplest way you can test your idea to people who are not your friends and family, basically the people who don't care about your feelings, and get it out there. And then using the ugly baby test, record what the responses are and determine whether or not this is something viable. And so there's ways to do that, but money should not, getting investment should not be the center of why you're building what you're building. And it should not be the barrier either. And I believe as an investor, and this is advice I give to all like my investments in my portfolio and other entrepreneurs, is really think of investment, particularly investment that takes equity, take ownership of your company, as fuel. Think of it as the fuel to get the idea to the next step, not the starter fluid. And if you think of it in that way, it really helps you to put investment in context.
How do you even know how much money you're going to need for something? You've got a great idea and you just don't even know where to start in terms of the kinds of investors you need and the amount of money you need.
I think that's where doing the minimal viable product, doing that like sort of initial basic version of the idea that you can put out into the market and test becomes very, very important. Because at the beginning, you have no clue and you wouldn't know, right? You haven't built it yet. You don't know what staffing costs are going to be. You may not know what raw material costs may be, especially in this very fluid supply chain challenge time we have right now. So by doing that minimal viable product, you start to get that those data points of how much is going to cost for staff? What staff do I need? What type of raw materials do I have? How do I get those raw materials? What is the cheapest place to get them? What type of technological infrastructure do I need? Do I even need a technological infrastructure? For many businesses, you don't, right? And how much is that going to cost me? And do I have to hire someone from the outside to manage it? You start to get all those data points and then help you really put together a budget for your company and to really understand what the true cost to do what you're doing is. And business is called cost of goods. But like, how much does it actually cost you to build this product or build this service? And then once you know that, then you can start to back into how much money you need. If you know that it costs all in $10,000 a month for you to run your business, and you want to make sure that you have at least a year runway, basically a year of money in the bank to cover your business, then you know that you need about $120,000 from investors. And so if you take it from that approach, it makes it much easier versus, okay, I just have an idea, now I'm going to go get money. Those days are kind of behind us a little bit, actually, of being able to just get, you know, millions of dollars based on a napkin. That we're not in that time anymore.
Right. And social media advertising is so important, but the algorithms, it's so hard to figure out, you know, just how much it costs to get a client, a customer, and like you're just spending so much, it's hard to get a return on investment, I guess. And so like, where do you even start with social media advertising and making a budget and what words to use? And is that even worth it?
It depends on what you're doing. If you have a product, if you have particularly one that's very visual, social media can be very great, particularly Instagram. If you have something that's a little bit more complex, like a startup, maybe you're building a healthcare service or healthcare startup, you know, maybe social media may not be the driving force to getting customers. If you are a company that's working with other businesses, particularly if they're large businesses, then social media is probably not going to help you as much. If you're working with smaller businesses, though, social media can be very, very helpful. So it really depends on the type of business you have and what your business goals are. And that's what should determine whether or not you use social media. One of the things I will say, and I talk about this in Build a Damn Thing, is as an entrepreneur, you want to be very careful not to confuse your community with your customer. Sometimes your customer is your community, and sometimes your community is your customer. But that's not always the case. And the analogy I use is, how many of us have stopped by like a Starbucks or a coffee shop and not bought anything, but went in to speak quickly with a friend or to meet someone? You know, we're part of the community of that coffee shop, but we're not necessarily a customer of that coffee shop. And so it's really, really important as an entrepreneur that you focus on your customers, not necessarily on the community, that your customer is always number one in that scenario, and your community is, which is very important, but don't put so much into the community that you neglect your customer.
What message do you have for people who are not the rich white guys and want to be a success in business, in starting their own business? What message do you have for them in terms of not getting discouraged?
You know, we're all looking to lead a creative life in which we can control. And entrepreneurship is a path in which we chose to do it. I think it's really important to remember that entrepreneurship is helping you create a freedom that you may not have if you work in traditional environments. And so once you center that, then it makes it easier to kind of go through some of the bumps that you're going to go through, because you're building for this goal, which is this life in which you can control. And always centering that is always super helpful. It's going to be hard. Entrepreneurship is a marathon. It's not a race. It doesn't happen tomorrow. The most successful entrepreneurs were, you know, decades in making. And if you keep that in mind and keep that perspective and keep in mind that you're creating this life that you get to control, then it makes it a little bit easier to go through some of those tough times.
Knowing where you are today, I'm wondering if you ever look back and wonder if your journey had been that of a rich white male, and whether or not you think you would be as fulfilled, and whether your definition of success would be the same, and whether or not you'd be the same person if that had been your journey.
You know, the interesting thing about like writing Build a Damn Thing is that it was a moment of reflection for me. I think anyone who's ever written a book, particularly if it's a book about you, it forces you to sort of look back on your life and think through things. I think my life would not have been nearly as cool or interesting if I was like a white guy. It would not have been as much of an adventure. Definitely it would have been easier, significantly easier. But it wouldn't have had the richness that I have now and the experiences that I have now. And for that, I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't change it at all.
And your definition of rich is different, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's
what
very
does
different.
Rich mean to you, right?
Rich means that I get to control my life. That's literally what it means to me. It has nothing to do with the amount of money in the bank. There's a lot of people who have a lot of money in the bank but don't control their lives. For me, the ability to be able to be where I want to be, to choose who I want to interact with, to wear what I want to wear. You know, if I want to wear 4-inch Christian Louboutin shoes to a meeting, I can do that and no one's going to say anything.
Yeah.
Having that sort of freedom to dictate the life that I want, that to me is what's rich. It's not about money at all.
How can someone pick themselves up after a business or a business idea has failed?
failure is a part of the journey. And accepting that makes your journey more fun and more interesting. Everyone who's ever succeeded has failed. Everyone. In the book, I talk about Beyonce. Now, I don't know how many people know the story of Beyonce, what happened before. I mean, we all know Beyonce now, like
right,
queen.
Right.
But they actually had a group before Destiny's Child that lost on Star Search. Now, if you can imagine Beyonce and, you know, the group Destiny's Child, it wasn't called Destiny's Child then, lost to some, I think it was like some random rock group called Skeleton Crew. Who's heard of Skeleton Crew? I haven't heard of them. Right? And it was a real turning point for Beyonce and the other members of the group, because it was like, do we stop pursuing this? They were like 12 or 13. Do we stop pursuing this and it's become regular kids, or do we continue to work really hard for this goal? And they chose the latter. They continue to work really hard, and the rest is history. Michael Jordan has a very famous quote about how he's missed thousands of shots, thousands of free throws, several big game, game on the line shots. But because of those failures is why he's a winner, because he knew how to fail and he knew how to get back up from the failure. And so everyone who you can think of who has been successful has failed. Steve Jobs, right? He was like the tech god that people like so look up to. He was fired from his own company. He was fired from Apple, right? Yeah. Everyone has failed. Every great person has failed. But the difference between a great person and a normal person is those people who failed knew to get back up. And they knew that failure was just a blip on the roadmap to success.
If you're listening to this and you consider yourself to be an emotionally fragile person, what should you do? Because hearing about that, it's like, yeah, people who really, really want their idea to be successful and are reading these books and reading these success quotes and everything. Like, I'm very similar to you. I read everything. I know the quotes. I love all this. It gives me encouragement. But there are some people who maybe have good ideas and do feel discouraged to the point of giving up on something that maybe they shouldn't. And maybe it gets them to a point of depression or, thank God, I just want the easy road. What do they do?
So first, I would say it's really important to do what I talk about in the book, which is create a personal advisory board. And these people are, we know the advisory board in terms of business, right? Business advice and stuff like that. But personal advisory board are the people who are team you when you were the CEO of a company. These are the people for whom, the ones you turn to help you keep going and give you the fuel that you need and sometimes the tough love that you need. And all our advisory boards are different. My personal advisory board is a very interesting mixture of people. I am a mom to a 6-year-old. He's on my personal advisory board because he makes me laugh like no one's business. And you need that person on your advisory board who, when things are really rough, that can just make you laugh. Because sometimes you just need to laugh. You just need to let it go. We get so much into our heads as entrepreneurs that we sometimes forget the bigger picture. And so when my son is like making up raps about toilet people and I'm like stressing about an investment, it's really hard to stress about an investment when you have a 6-year-old rapping to you about toilet people, right? Uh-huh. And it just takes you like out of that. Another person I talk about quite extensively in my book is my mother, who when you're a person of color or you come from an immigrant family, and maybe you're the first person to reach a certain level of success, people tend to think they have ownership. Everyone has ownership of your success, right? And so my mother is kind of the enforcer. So anytime a kooky family member reads about me doing something and asks me for money or anything like that, they're always sent to my mother, who very gently tells them no. And, she's a 75-year-old Black grandma. Like, no one's going to argue with her. It's like pointless to argue with her. And so she's like really good at like shutting things down. But how that helps me is that I don't have to take that emotional weight on. Mm-hmm. I don't have to take the emotional weight of telling that person no. My mother takes it for me. You know, you also need a truth teller. You need somebody to tell you the truth. So if you are feeling really frustrated and your business is not going somewhere, it could be because that's not the right business. That is a possibility. Or maybe it needs to pivot a little bit. And so having that person on your personal advisory board who can tell you the truth in a way in which you can hear it. Because, you know, some people can tell us the truth, but we can't hear it. And then there's people who can get us to really understand and hear things. And so having that person on your advisory board is going to be great. None of these people are business people per se. None of them are wealthy. None of them wrote books or anything like that. These are just normal people in your lives who can provide the service to you and want to see you win. And they want you to be successful.
I'm wondering what kind of an impact do you think the pandemic has had on entrepreneurship?
The pandemic has had an amazing impact on entrepreneurship. I think it's scaled it to heights that we have never seen before. I think people have realized that you don't have to work at a place anymore, that all the rules that were told to us were kind of arbitrary. You know, before the pandemic, we had these sort of three spaces. We had home, we had work, and we had play space. And then the pandemic happened and all those three spaces became one like big kind of messy glob, right? And so we realized that I don't have to go to the office to get my work done. You know, companies had record-breaking profits during the pandemic. And they did it with people not in the office, right? So this idea of productivity is going to be off, or you can't work from home because you're not going to be able to interact with your coworkers. All of that has been proven to be false. And what we're seeing is that people are able to manage their time in different ways. And entrepreneurship, again, being that tool that allows you to be creative and control your life, it makes sense that it would scale during the pandemic, because that is the one time where we were actually given almost 2 years of being able to control our lives and being able to be creative. And so it's had a massive impact. And I think all of us had creative pursuits. I know a number of friends who like started sourdough bread. That was like a whole big thing.
That really was a thing.
That was a thing. Yeah,
like I baked. I was like the most brilliant baker now, because during the pandemic, there wasn't very much you could do other than to bake and do sort of things. And so we all got to pursue these creative pursuits. And many of us saw that our creative pursuits were the things that fueled us, and not the corporate job or the desk job or whatever we were doing. And so a lot of people left and decided, hey, you know, I'm going to pursue this sort of creative life. And I think that's amazing. There's a significant rise in entrepreneurship in the U.S. as a result of that.
It certainly sparked a lot of creativity and great things from you. So tell us about your pandemic journey and George Floyd and the impact that had on where your life went, that maybe the pandemic and had all that not happened, maybe you wouldn't be in that place.
You know, the pandemic forced us to stop. And if you're someone like myself, who's always going, always got something to do, always going, always moving, it was a necessary pause, and it forced me to stop, and it forced me to think about my life, and it forced me to think about what I was doing and where I was going. And what I was thinking was pretty much what everyone else was going through too, right? A big force to stop for a moment. You couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't do anything. So you had to spend time with yourself. And I don't think many of us had spent very much time with ourselves pre-pandemic. And I started to think about what I was doing. And what brought me joy and what I wanted to do next in my life. And so all of this was happening. I was leading a major organization that works with Black and Latinx women startups. And the pandemic happened. I'm an epidemiologist, so it was kind of crazy for me. This is something that in epidemiology, we always knew was going to come at some point, but we didn't know it was going to come when it came. And just saw the challenges as I was running this organization for women of color to receive the PPP loans. If we all remember back to March and April 2020, if you didn't have a private banker, you weren't getting a PPP loan. Regardless of your color, your race, your gender, you weren't getting one. If you weren't a rich white guy, you weren't getting the PPP loans. And so we saw that as a particular acute problem for women of color, and I'd authorized this amount of money to be given to the founders, and it just, the impact was massive. And as a result, I took some money that I was supposed to go on a vacation. It was a cruise to Alaska, leaving from Seattle. And in April 2020, Seattle was the hotbed of COVID. So yeah. We're like, it's the vacation that was never, ever going to happen,
yeah.
ever.
Yeah.
And it still hasn't. And took that money and started the Dooney Fund. Started off as $10,000, $100 sort of micro investments to Black women entrepreneurs. The idea behind it wasn't that this $100 was going to revolutionize anybody's life, but that it was going to be almost like a gesture of you could do it. Like, we know this is the hardest time, and we know that no one understands what you're going through, but I do. Like, Catherine, as an entrepreneur, as a Black woman entrepreneur, I know what you're going through. And so this little bit of money is just to encourage you. And I call it the baby you can do it money. Meaning, here's a look. My grandmother would give me, you know, $20 and say, you know, baby, you know, here, you're doing a good job. Here's a little bit of money for you to go do something for yourself. And the fund is named after my grandma, who I'm named after. Her first name is Catherine. Her nickname is Dooney. Everyone calls her Dooney. Even the postman call her Dooney. Everybody calls her Dooney. And within a 6-week time period, we gave out 1,500 grants, over $150,000 worth of grants to Black women entrepreneurs. And it fundamentally changed my life. The emails I got, one person sent an email saying, you know, I was at my lowest point and was ready to give up. And then I got the Dooney Fund. And she said she copied the email I sent her, like congratulating her, and put it over her desk to remind her that somebody cared. And wow. For me, that, like, I mean, even now I get emotional thinking about it.
Yeah. It's like, that means everything.
It means everything. It means everything. And that had a profound impact on me. And so I started Genius Guild really with this idea of, like, how do we continue to invest in communities, particularly the Black community, in a way that generates returns for everyone? Is there a way that we can model this concept of everybody wins? Because I do feel like we're in this false narrative that if I win, you lose, or if you win, I lose. And I don't think that has to be the case at all. Uh-huh. We don't all have to get the same amount of winnings, but we all can win. And how do we do that? And how do we use tools like venture capital and entrepreneurship to help promote that and help create that space?
And Catherine, you know, our show is called Nobody Told Me. And we always ask our guests, what is your nobody told me lesson? What is that thing that nobody told you that you had to learn the hard way that you'd like to pass on to somebody else?
Nobody told me that the rules were really arbitrary. Nobody told me that. And I think we all learned in the pandemic that a lot of the rules that we operate under were just put by somebody for some reason, but there's like no real reason to have them.
Yeah.
And that they can be broken, and they should be broken many, many times. And so no one told me that. And it wasn't until we're in this pandemic where nobody had any sort of answer, and I was able to do something like the Dooney Fund and just do it on my own because I didn't ask for permission. That's another thing nobody told me. You don't have to ask for permission. You don't need permission. I think as women, that's a big thing. We can just do it.
Yeah. And
so, yeah, like, no one told me that. But now I know, and I'm telling everybody.
Oh, I love it. You're telling people such great things in the book, and we would love to know where people can get it and how they can connect with you.
So yeah, you can get Build a Damn Thing anywhere books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your local bookstore. You can connect with me on Twitter or Instagram. I would love, 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 love to hear how you're using the book. So just the hashtag Build a Damn Thing. Just use that in any of your posts and let me know how you're building and what you're doing and how what you're building is doing or anything that you've learned from the book. I would love to learn more. And I look forward to continuing conversations on how we can be builders and how we can continue to grow and scale our companies.
And your website is catherinefinney.com?
Yes.
And that's KATHRYNFINNEY.com.
Yes. But if you Google, it'll be lots of like good stuff comes up. And so if you can't remember that, just remember Catherine Finney. You Google and those all the different ways that you can get a hold of me will also come up as well.
Well, you should be really proud of yourself because this book is really amazing and makes entrepreneurship really approachable for anybody, really. So we can't recommend the book highly enough. And thank you for doing what you're doing and helping people.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you all.
Again, our thanks to Catherine Finney, whose new book is called Build the Damn Thing, How to Start a Successful Business If You're Not a Rich White Guy. And her website is katherinefinney.com. I'm Jan Black.
And I'm Laura Owens.
You're listening to Nobody Told Me. Thank you so much for joining us.